Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. Welcome to day two. I hope you had a good sleep. So yesterday, I taught the first two of the four right efforts. There was overcoming, or just downright avoiding, avoiding unskillful things, or avoiding crossing the dotted line into excessiveness or obsessiveness. There's also an aspect of avoiding just because you came here at all. You avoided distractions from the city or wherever you're from. You came here and you secluded yourself. So these concepts can be applied in many ways, and it's worth thinking of all the different ways. Okay, so that was avoiding. That was the first of the right efforts. Then there was the second right effort, overcoming, or letting go, abandoning. And I gave the example of a mosquito bite. It itches, you want to scratch it, but it's best to just leave it alone. And it'll eventually disappear on its own. And when it disappears, we have overcome it. All we had to do was abandon it. All we had to do was let go of that urge to scratch it. Many of the problems in our lives are like this. If we just leave them alone, they do go away. Now, not every problem goes away on its own. Some problems we should eventually figure out, solve. But many of them do go away if we just take our time and wait. So Buddhism has a strong emphasis on that patience necessary to tolerate it until it goes away. A lot of our problems go away when we do this. It's a tremendously efficient way of living where we don't waste our energy. When problems could have just solved themselves, we could just wait. Okay, so now I'd like to teach the third right effort. Okay, so developing. And the Pali word is upada. Upada. And literally translated, it means arising, appearance of, coming into being. Okay, so this is the opposite of the first one. The first one was anupadaya, non-arising, non-appearance, not coming into existence. So this is the opposite. Things do arise, they do come into existence. So developing skillful qualities, skillful behaviors. So as we meditated together and we worked on some object of meditation, and the default here is mindfulness of body. If you don't know which one to do, mindfulness of body is a good default. Or perhaps mindfulness of breath might work better for you. And I always like to do the object of awareness of the space. So as we gently stay with our intention with these objects of meditation. That keeps us in the present moment, and this is developing a new way of using our minds. This will develop peace of mind and peace of heart. As we anchor ourselves to the present moment and ground ourselves in our body, this serves us to decondition all of the ways we've lived that were very distracting or unsettling. So we are steering our minds, steering our hearts towards that calm and peacefulness, a gentle steering. Not really controlling though, we want to stop short of being forceful. If we have an attitude that's kind of forceful or too serious, the heart doesn't really like being bossed around. We can just sort of irritate ourselves if we... Maybe you can get away with a little bit of that here and there. Just like the way a parent would know with their child, once in a while, you do have to be a little strict with your child. You got to be a little tough with your child once in a while if they're getting too badly behaved. But it's not the default. The default is being patient, and the default is being gentle. Having read the suttas, I've read the early Buddhist texts 5 times over now. And one of the qualities of the Buddha's leadership that I really appreciate is he's actually very patient with the monks and very kind of, you might say, he grants them a lot of flexibility and he grants them a lot of choice in how they're going to practice and what their daily routine would look like. Now here on this retreat, it's quite a structured retreat. You're only here for the 7 or 8 days. You're not monks and nuns. You know, you're just kind of come here for a while and then have to go back. So this is quite structured. But the Buddha actually does not impose a lot of structure on the monks, other than the Vinaya rules. The Vinaya rules are a bunch of don'ts. You know, don't do this, don't do that. Don't handle money, don't eat food after high noon, all this kind of thing. It's a bunch of don'ts. But as long as everyone's well behaved, he grants them a lot of freedom. One of the don'ts is, if the sun comes up and a monk is still in bed, that's a lazy monk. You should already be up and practicing before the sun comes up, before dawn. So, you know, the monks can't be too terribly lazy. He's quite, you might say, moderate and permissive by default. Now, once in a while, he does have to crack down. He does have to discipline some monk who behaves really badly. And he can speak pretty harshly when, you know, here and there. Just like I was saying about a parent who once in a while has to be pretty tough with their kids. So the Buddha knows when to be like that, but it's surprisingly rare. It's not the default. He's not just harsh with them every single day. He's not serious all the time. There's this Chinese saying I came across that I felt was really, really good. It kind of summarized this. I can't speak Mandarin, but the English translation went, if parents don't know when to put their foot down, they'll have children that step on their toes. So I think we need to know when to put our foot down here and there. Not just with kids, even with our own behavior. Sometimes we get a little too lax. This morning somebody put out chocolate cookies for breakfast. And I saw those, I'm like, uh-oh, dessert for breakfast. I was very careful to just take two little ones. I wanted to shake that bag and take a few more. No. Watch out. If you have too much sugar, you'll be tired during the meditations. Just saying. Sugar kills energy later on. If you're having trouble with energy, if you're feeling tired, I'm going to recommend try to avoid sugar. Anything that's really sweet. It might improve your energy. Anyway, so back to the topic of developing wholesome qualities. So as we patiently and persistently develop our object of meditation, that is development. And we're actually using our minds in a new way. We live in a world now where what day goes by where we don't use our smartphones? When is the last time you remember a day where you never touched it? At all. From morning to night, you did not even touch it. Yeah, this retreat, this is that one time pretty much, yeah. And I would say there is a consequence to this, whether we would admit it or not. Which is, when we focus our attention on the screen of the phone, that focused attention, whatever it is on the screen, there could be a million different things on that screen, but the thing is you're focusing on it. And there is a way of using the mind, which is that focused in way. Now here we are on this meditation retreat, and I'm encouraging you to do the opposite. Open up your vision as much as you can. Do the opposite. See out to the sides. See as much to the ceiling and to the floor as you can. Okay, open it up. Just like my example with the flashlight yesterday. I had the focus beam and then the wide beam. Okay. All that smartphone use trains your mind to do the focus beam. So now it's time to do the opposite. Widen it out. It might be a little frustrating because you're not accustomed to it, but I say, oh, you want to do this, trust me. Back at the time of the Buddha, of course, there were no smartphones. No internet, no television. I think it is worth it to just imagine what that lifestyle was like. Even here in Malaysia, you only have to go back in time how far? Maybe 60 years, 70 years? And it would have been pretty similar. Where it's mostly an agricultural society. A lot of people, by default, are living on farms, you know, growing rice. Apparently, back in the time of the Buddha or any pre-industrial society, about 90% of the people are farmers. 90% were farmers. And they'd be living in small little houses, oftentimes a one-room house. The whole family is all in that one room. And during the day, most people get out of that room. They're outside, they're farming, they're going places, they're doing things. And when one is outside all the time, just imagine how your default would be that wide open awareness, you know, seeing all around you. That was our default for the longest time, how we used our minds. And I would further suggest that's where we are the happiest. That's when we feel the most connected with each other and happy. There is a lot of science now about how there's different ways of using our minds. That wide open way is the more happy one. That's where all the different hormones like serotonin, endorphins, oxytocin, all those happy juices, all those hormones, those are experienced when you have your mind in that more open way. When we use our minds in that very focused in way, you'll experience virtually none of those hormones. If you're really curious on this topic, I can recommend a book. I won't mention it now, but at the end of the retreat, ask me if you're curious. There is a fantastic book about this kind of thing. A lot of the monks are recommending it around. It's not a Buddhist book, but it's very compatible with what the Buddha teaches. So the Buddha lived in India during agrarian times. Agrarian means agriculture is the main thing. You might also say it was medieval times. So there's kings, there's armies, there's, you know, they have swords and spears and bow and arrow, that kind of thing. India wasn't even unified into one country yet. It was just a bunch of little kingdoms. Life was extremely simple. And before these agrarian times, we were hunter-gatherers for the longest time too, before that, before agriculture. So imagine wandering around in a little tribe of people. And absolutely, they would have a type of awareness that's very open, very open. You would want to know if there was a bush rustling a little bit off to the side. Maybe that's a rabbit. You might just want to catch that if you want to eat some supper tonight. You want to have that kind of awareness. Or maybe you hear some rustling up in the tree quietly. You would want to know about that. What if that's a tiger who might attack your tribe? Maybe grab one of your children. That'd be the end of that child. So the hunter-gatherers, I think, they used their awareness in this very wide open way. They were aware of nature. They lived close to the land. And that is how our physiology developed over time. And how our, I would say even today, like our emotions are still geared that way. Our physiology, our emotions, we're still kind of wired up for that lifestyle of a hunter-gatherer. And like I said, that's where the happy juices are. That's where we feel the happiest. So it might feel a bit strange, a bit disorienting to use our eyesight in a new way, you know, opening it up. But this is the developing which leads to happiness. Just because it feels strange doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. When the Buddha describes the Brahmaviharas, he oftentimes uses language, you know, pervade one quarter with a heart of loving kindness. One quarter means like, you know, one direction, like, let, you know, let's say to the north. And then pervading the second quarter with loving kindness. So, you know, let's say to the west. And pervading the third quarter. So let's say to the south. And the fourth quarter, so let's say to the east. So it's sort of the four directions, these quarters. And above as below, around and everywhere. So he uses a lot of poetic kind of inspiring language to invite us, I think, to feel that sense of openness. Okay, so I think this is enough for now, and I would suggest, you know, take advantage of the Nibbana Hall just over here for walking meditation if you're feeling a little drowsy, especially after we ate the meal. The monkeys won't be out yet. Nobody's burning any garbage. This is prime time. We're getting outside. Okay, so we're developing our objects of meditation. Okay, thank you.